It's Wednesday, August 19th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. We're right in the middle of busy season here at the Normal West Coast Media Headquarters, still unpacking the video and audio from Seattle Hemp Fest. I've got my interview with Pot Princess Amber going online today. That should be up at stash.normal.org, or you can check my YouTube channel, youtube.com/radicalruss. Also recording new voiceovers for the upcoming Normal Show Live that debuts on Labor Day weekend. That's been a whole lot of fun putting the stuff together for that show. Also wanted to point out the Normal National Conference coming up September 24th through the 26th, another event I'm getting ready for. I just spoke with mixed martial artist Toby Greer today from his home in California, and he has confirmed coming on to the Pot and Athleticism panel that we've got going on. Mark Stepnoski, former Dallas Cowboy, will be there. We've got a writer from ESPN, a swimmer slash triathlete who's a marijuana user. Lots of good information we'll be covering at that Normal National Conference. What time is that? Well, it's time to check our calendar of events. And speaking of hemp fests, the Olympia Hemp Fest is this weekend, the little sister event to Seattle Hemp Fest. Just a few miles south in the capital city of Olympia. Check that out on the 22nd and 23rd in Olympia. Also, we've got Waterband's Waterfest taking place this weekend at Nelson Ledges Quarry Park in Ohio. That's North Ohio Normal bringing that to our attention. On Saturday, Kansas City Normal's got Greenfest going on at the Uptown Theater Saturday and Sunday. Also, Oregon Normal has their regular medical marijuana cardholders meeting on Saturday. Then on Sunday, there's a Safer Book Launch benefit at the Eight Rivers Lodo in Denver. Check out saferchoice.org or chelseagreen.com or marijuanaissafer.com for information on that. And for information on all the events in the cannabis community, you can check out the Normal calendar of events at norml.org/calendar. To get your info up on the calendar, send me an email at stash@normal.org. It's a Normal shout-out. Plenty of shout-outs to get to today. We've got new chapters that are just about ready to be officially recognized on the Normal website in Nebraska and in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So if you want to join those fledgling chapters, send me an email at stash@normal.org. I also received phone calls from Louisiana, down in the Shreveport area, and from Rochester, New York, from activists who are looking to get involved there, as well as our regular shout-outs to the state of Delaware, my home state area, southwestern Idaho, and my longtime goal of North Dakota. We're going to get a chapter in North Dakota, I swear it. If you're in any of those areas, send me an email to stash@normal.org. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, a little bit of a change from our regular programming. For our hemp headlines, I'm going to go in depth on a story about Dominic Holden, who's a writer for Seattle's The Stranger weekly newspaper, and he was formerly a board member and director at Seattle Hemp Fest. He had some constructive criticism for Hemp Fest that he printed in The Stranger, and that got a lot of reaction in the paper, here on the Stash blog, and as it turns out, backstage at HempFest, so I'll bring you that full story. In our Cannabis Science segment with Dr. Mitch Erlewine, we're going to discuss how to keep yourself healthy at the summer events, as well as a look at the anti-cancer properties and the negative effects on lung function that have recently been reported in studies, but ignored in the mainstream media. And as a special segment today for normal newsmakers, I'm going to provide for you my entire 27-minute set at the Laughs Comedy Stage. It wasn't a comedy set, I'll tell you that much, at the Seattle Hemp Fest. I was there to give a short 10 or 15-minute speech, and they liked it so much they kept me on stage. So the whole thing at the end of our podcast today. All that and more coming up on your normal daily audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Seattle Stranger writer kicked out of HempFest backstage. Now, last week I told you the story written by Dominic Holden in Seattle's newspaper, The Stranger. He had mentioned that the Hemp Fest was regressive and archaic, complained about the tie-dyes and the reggae fusion coming from the stage, and expressed that Hemp Fest was stuck in a countercultural time warp. His point here was that Hemp Fest was driving away potential supporters with its hippie accessories and artifacts and referred to HempFest as a patchouli-stained ghetto. Now, I had responded to that with a little bit of support for our hippie brethren, so to speak, and the tie-dye and so on. I even kind of mentioned how the hippies were right in a lot of the ways that we look at global warming and recycling and all these other issues that are popular today. So I was quite surprised when I got backstage at the main stage on Sunday and found Dominic sitting there in the backstage area right near all the tie-dye banners. And this is what he wrote about the experience on The Stranger's blog. I got kicked out of HempFest's backstage yesterday, apparently for suggesting in The Stranger that the event should lose the tie-dyes on the stages and go for a broader appeal. After listening to a few speakers and consuming one gigantic veggie burrito with pickled jalapenos, I went behind the main stage. I was talking to a friend when a member of the HempFest board, John Davis, whom I've known for about 15 years, approached me and said, quote, "You can't be back here, you have to go," end quote. Davis snatched the pass out of my hand, and as the security guy escorted me out, he said that it's because I'm a, quote, "member of the media," end quote. I've been a member of the media in past years, and I've always been allowed backstage, and before I was a reporter, back when I was the spokesman for HempFest, several times we'd have reporters walk freely backstage. So what gives? HempFest director Vivian McPeak reportedly told a staffer, who went to ask what the fuck was going on, that I had, quote, proverbially stabbed him in the back, end quote. But Vivian, I thought you were omnipotent. About 10 minutes earlier, he was on the main stage mic referring to himself as, quote, the great Vivian McPeak, end quote. The issue, clearly, is that HempFest organizers are outraged that anyone would dare critique their event. They cannot separate themselves from their culture, from their politics. So any commentary of their political strategy, simply saying they should take down the cheesy tie-dyes, is apparently a personal backstabbing. That's a tragically self-centered perspective for any organization, political cause, or leader, especially one that is, quote, great. Dominic, you must have been ousted shortly after I had a chance to say hi to you and your brother backstage. I had my media people nearly kicked out of backstage at main stage as well, as HempFest had a backstage escort requirement this year. Any folks with media passes, without an accompanying speaker or musical performer, were kicked out, I was told. Too many people trying to relax backstage didn't want any photos or stories about what they were doing, I guess. I appreciated the back and forth that we had on this topic over at the Stash. I'm still of the opinion that 200,000 people gathered peacefully in a park for a weekend, openly smoking marijuana, while an all-volunteer crew wrangles hundreds of vendors and six stages, is enough of a political statement as it is. But I also understand the "that ain't me" reaction from many pot smokers. It's the same reaction my wife gives when she sees bud-covered naked women in High Times magazine. To that, I say, great, please, form a new magazine or present a new HempFest for all the cannabis-closeted squares to come enjoy. If there are so many who are so uncomfortable with hippie, tie-dye, patchouli-stained ghettos, there surely should be a huge audience for the new, short-haired, respectable Polos and Dockers HempFest with special guest Kenny G. And there must be plenty of ad revenue available for the new Cannabis Connoisseur magazine. Many have brought up the HempFest objective and purpose. 200,000 people openly smoking pot equaling no disaster is a huge example of, quote, educating the public through example, end quote. Panels on hemp, media, medicine, politics, and law at Hemposium are nothing but educating the public. Normal, Oregon Normal, Safer, Inland Northwest Normal, and other nonprofits there are also educating the public. Vendors selling everything you can make from hemp are educating the public. Personally, my walking an estimated 7 miles through wall-to-wall people to speak on four stages was educating the public. I guarantee you, hundreds of people now have the congressional switchboard and the White House comment line programmed in their cell phones now from speeches by me and Madeline Martinez. Hundreds of people now know the prohibition stories of Georgia Representative Tommy Caning for Potheads Benton, Michigan student Derek Kopp, and Berwyn Heights Mayor Shai Calvo. I spent 27 minutes at the Laughs comedy stage educating a growing crowd about police tactics in drug busts, marijuana health statistics, marijuana usage statistics, constitutional rights, and state and federal legislation. HempFest is what it is, and is the most successful one of its kind. The criticisms you leveled at HempFest were taken culturally by people who consider themselves hippies and represent themselves with tie-dye and other countercultural attire. Don't be surprised they took it like organizers of a pro-Israel rally might take it if you suggested more mainstream people would be attracted to their cause if they got rid of all the Hebrew writing, offered some pork dishes, and kept those guys dressed in all black with the funny hats and curly-cue sideburns off of the stage. I know that's not how you intended it. You intended constructive criticism for a huge public event to be more effective. I also know you didn't mean it personally. I've hung out with you at HempFest and other events before, and I know you to not be abrasive or insulting. But in this case, Dom, you may have just been a bit culturally insensitive. The people pouring their heart into HempFest are hippies. So, lose the hippie vibe sounds like, you people bring us all down, to them. And that's a hell of a thing to read when you're dedicating a large part of your life to something. And that's a hell of a thing to read when you're dedicating a large part of your life to something. And in fact, the hippies did go out of their way to make HempFest as diverse as possible. I heard a 1930s style old-timey band, hardcore gangsta rap, a bitchin' jazz acoustic guitar player, and an Ozzy Osbourne cover, all on the same main stage. Not all at once, of course. I saw Boca, Veggie, and Beef Burgers served for the backstage VIPs. There was a dance-safe stage playing the most unhippie electronica possible. I saw more guy-linered multi-chain droopy drawers goth kids than I did hippies. Finally, as one commenter at the slog noted about white folks not needing their own month, Hempfest is for the freaky, the countercultural, the hippie, to celebrate marijuana. The conservative-looking minivan-driving couple with a house in the hills who smoke pot in the garage when the kids are away don't need a hemp fest. They're not the ones getting harassed by police and busted for marijuana. It's a bit of a chicken and the egg, isn't it? The squares don't want to get busted like the hippies, so only the hippies are left to agitate for marijuana legalization, which the squares would support if only it weren't so hippified. I say the hippies have done their share. I am ready and willing to give speeches at Squarefest whenever it comes to fruition. NormalCon 2009, Yes We Cannabis, September 24th through 26th, 2009, in San Francisco, California.
The war on drugs has been an utter failure. And I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
President Obama was right in 2004, and 5 years later, the American people agree.
As regards to legalization, it's not in the president's vocabulary, and it's not in mine.
We're working hard to make sure legalization is in the drug czar's vocabulary.
Whether legalizing marijuana would improve the economy... The answer is no, I don't think that is a good strategy.
There's nothing funny about legalization, Mr. President. Registration, sponsorships, and vending information is available at norml.org or by calling 888-67-NORMAL. Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid and which claims are reefer madness? Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Normal's look at cannabis science. We're back here with Dr. Mitch Earlywine for our weekly dose of cannabis science. Dr. Mitch, welcome back to the show. We just returned from Seattle Hemp Fest last weekend and experienced a beautiful, gorgeous weekend. And as folks are going out to these outdoor festivals, I wonder if you got any quick tips for them as far as how to stay healthy out there in the sun and these, you know, big crowds.
The key on that is hydration, and I know everybody's a little ambivalent about the idea because you don't want to stand in line at the porta potty. But I assure you, every ounce of water you drink is going to be to your benefit in the long run. Heat stroke is a real drag, and even those just mild feelings of nausea and exhaustion are often the result of just not sucking down good, healthy fluids. And by all means, it's just really a good habit. The other thing is to, you know, really treat the sun with a lot of respect because it really can fry your skin. So sunscreen and all those things that your mom always told you really do seem to help a lot. In big crowds, if you feel yourself just, you know, getting uncomfortable or feeling like you're cramped and stuff like that, by all means, step aside. Take a little moment to get your head together, sit down somewhere if that's possible, and just, you know, stay off from the whole big gang, and you'll be surprised at how mellow things can get. And often you can, you know, sense this early on. So if you're just not having the best time at all, go ahead and intervene early.
Yeah, and I'll testify to that sun part. I have this, of course, my iconic pot leaf hat that I wear. I call it my male pattern baldness disguise system. Kept the top of the head just fine. Forgot about the face. And so now I have a wonderful little sunburn line across the top of my forehead. forehead where the hat covers. So
I have to admit, I'm in that club that ends up shampooing with Solarcaine on occasion. part of life, I'm afraid.
Yeah, we're all getting older. I guess it beats the alternative. So another thing I'd recommend if you're going to go to any of these festivals is definitely some nice, good walking shoes. Take care of those feet. Returning to our cannabis science, Paul Armentano, our deputy director here at Normal, has some great information, some posts that he's put up on The Hill and I believe Huffington Post. And it has to do with the way the media covers the stories of marijuana and cancer. And in particular, how we've had this recent series of studies that have shown marijuana to have perhaps an anti-tumoral or a little bit of a protective effect. I was wondering if you could kind of give us a rundown of these and kind of compare them to how they, you know, treat the stories on, you know, marijuana causing terrible harm.
Well, so for folks who don't remember, it does turn out that THC and a number of cannabinoids actually have some cancer-fighting properties. So tumors seem to shrink in the presence of certain cannabinoids, and THC is included. Nobody's saying, hey, smoke pot as a cancer prevention program, but the fact that this literature really didn't make it through to any of the mainstream media in the way we would anticipate does say something about some of the biases here in just the way news is covered. We've touched on this in the past, but I do find that anything, no matter how poorly done, seems to get a lot of play if it's negative about cannabis. If it has even the mildest positive connotations, it seems to get swept under the rug. A number of folks, including Paul, Bruce Merkin, and several others have pointed this out to me time and again. Bruce Merkin has a whole chapter on this in my book, Pot Politics, and I think in a sense, it's part of this bias against happy news. How often do you pick up the paper and see, wonderful thing, and here's another wonderful thing? It just doesn't seem to happen the way I wish it would. But in addition, the sort of anti-cannabis sentiment seems to creep in on this time and time again. I've been trying to cover these kinds of things in my column in High Times, but I'm sort of preaching to the converted. So if folks do see Paul's story in the Huffington Post, by all means, pass that link around to your most, you know, right-wing prohibitionist friends, and you don't even have to say anything. Just get them to click, and it's funny how this will gradually make it. But I'm afraid we can't count on the mainstream media to do this for us. We really have to spread the word ourselves.
Yeah, and, you know, the other thing that I noticed, too, is that when a story comes across that maybe on some other, you know, when it talks about alcohol, for example, we just published one last week on this study out of London, I think it was, or perhaps it was Sydney, but it showed an increase in oral cancer risk for those who were moderate or heavy alcohol drinkers in their 40s, and yet that doesn't spread like wildfire if it were like a cannabis story.
Yes, the alcohol-cannabis comparison is something I know we've, you know, been primed for thanks to Paul and his book, and I find this really not only just, you know, flagrant misinformation, but folks are just completely ignorant on these topics. So my undergraduates, when I mentioned links between heavy alcohol use and not only mouth but also esophagus, stomach, pancreatic, you know, all these other forms of cancer linked to, you know, chronic heavy alcohol use, they're all stunned because they tend to think of it as, oh, it's just the liver or just the kidney or something like that. But no, alcohol is a toxin, and alcohol with long-term exposure can increase your risk for a whole host of disorders. And ironically, at least with some of the cancers, THC may actually be a buffer against it. But again, the key is keeping drinking moderate rather than going crazy.
And how hard is it to try to tease out these results when we're talking about looking at cancer or the effects of using substances when obviously many people both smoke pot and drink alcohol and maybe even smoke cigarettes as well?
Unfortunately, we really have to turn to the animal literature on this to tease it apart in a way that can be effective. And I've seen it work against cannabis in really sneaky ways. So you'll see, you know, some alarmist thing about cannabis in the brain, and then when I look closely in the methods section, you find that, in fact, the cannabis users were also pretty heavy binge drinkers in the sample, and they either brush that aside with a single paragraph or try to control for it statistically in ways that we really don't understand. So it really infuriates me that, in a sense, cannabis gets blamed for a whole bunch of outcomes that are probably stemming from alcohol. I see this most flagrantly in the dependence literature, because folks don't really know which drug is causing my symptoms of withdrawal, for example. And it could be caffeine, it could be nicotine, it could be alcohol. And if they happen to be cannabis users, it always gets blamed on that. Ironically, when folks go inpatient and they can't smoke cigarettes as much as they want, and they're not having access to alcohol or to cannabis, the report is usually, oh, and they're, you know, shaky and weird and experiencing withdrawal because of lack of cannabis, when there isn't any examination of how much less they're even getting access to their cigarettes.
Hmm. Boy, it's fascinating research trying to find those information. And again, like we've talked about before, there's some ethical concerns. You can't exactly, you know, round up 20 people and force them to smoke pot only. It's kind of difficult.
Although I do have some volunteers lined up.
I'll bet you do. I did want to get to a question that you'd received from a listener, a reader, maybe of your High Times column. You know, the people are always trying to find new ways to get high. This is one I wouldn't have particular thought of, but the use of embalming fluid in marijuana, something called fry.
This is a real heartbreaker to me. So if you can imagine someone lacing a joint with embalming fluid and thinking, this is a good idea, I'll smoke this now, that seems to be happening enough to at least generate some research studies. Now, the idea itself is just so creepy. I can't imagine how it got started. It does create an outrageously intoxicating, sedating, some say hallucinatory experience, but it is so far from anything any cannabis user would want. There are all these weird muscle impairments associated with the intoxication, drooling, not walking right. I mean, it just sounds really, really awful. But the other thing is, we don't have a ton of data on this in humans, but this is clearly a toxin. This was designed to keep dead bodies from rotting. There is no way this could be good for you in any sense. And so turning to this is generally bad for your health. It's also associated with a whole lot of adverse experiences, including basically you're unable to defend yourself against crimes done to you. And so, you know, here it's already a rough situation, and now you're putting yourself at risk because you're basically incapable of defending yourself. Mm. The bottom line is, if we had a tax and regulated market, nobody would ever get slipped this, of course. And I certainly want to emphasize that there is absolutely nothing about this high that could be anywhere near worth the risk.
Yeah, it's just crazy. You know, I heard you talk about this, and my first thought was, wow, you know, I've thought of a lot of things to try, but embalming fluid was never on the list. And then my second thought was, even if it was on the list, where the hell would I go and get embalming fluid from? Like, you're hanging out with the funeral directors or something. I don't know how this works.
Well, and the sad part is, this is just what people are told. A number of sources have mentioned that, in fact, people are putting PCP in and saying that it's this, as if that's some kind of better alternative.
Yeah.
And it seems to command a better price in some circumstances. So, you know, the underground market is just no way for this kind of thing to proceed. We really need to get this out of there.
Yeah, absolutely. This, you know, you don't have people slipping PCP or embalming fluid into Coors Light. So, time to tax and regulate, keep some purity and quality controls in our cannabis market so that the consumers can get a guaranteed, pure, organic, hopefully, crop. Dr. Mitch Earlywine joins us every Wednesday here for our cannabis science, and thanks again for joining us this week.
Looking forward to talking to you next week.
I'll see you then. It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. Hey, Tokers, this is Radical Russ. There's only one thing I love as much as fine Oregon bud, and that's spicy food so hot it'll peel paint. Thanks to the generous sponsorship of HerbAgeDesigns.com, I'm putting both my true loves to the test to support the launch of Normal Show Live. It's the El Jefe Chicken Hot Wings Eating Contest, Friday, August 28th, here in Portland, and the contest benefits the American Red Cross, another favorite charity of mine. You can help. We're signing up pledges for the contest starting as low as 25 cents per wing, up to the 20 wings I'm pledging to eat. You can win, too. The top money entry and a randomly selected entry win HerbAge prizes and one of my Starfish Designs Gandalf-style pieces of glass art. Send in your entry to stash@normal.org with the subject Hot Wings Contest and tell me how much you'll pledge per wing, up to 20 wings. Also include your real name, age, and shipping address should you win the prize. Only entries from adults 18 and older will be accepted. Starfish Designs prizes will not be shipped to Idaho, Pennsylvania, or Indiana.
The effects of marijuana prohibition are felt by all Americans in every walk of life, regardless of race, creed, color, religion, party politics, social status, wealth, gender, sexual orientation, or even one's use or non-use of marijuana. As the Marijuana Smokers Lobby, Normal hears the stories of these average Americans and brings them to the attention of our policymakers and our fellow citizens in this segment we call Normal Newsmakers.
Speakers here that are provided by HempFest, and they're here to get the message across about how fabulous the legalization of marijuana would be. And that meant that my dad wouldn't have served jail time when I was 7 years old. That was awesome. Anyways, my sister, she's only one laughing. We live through it. It's awesome. Anyways, without further ado, I'm going to bring to the stage your guest speaker here for 2009 HempFest, last comedy stage, Russ Belville. He's the National Outreach Coordinator and Media Producer for Normal. Fabulous. Thank you.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm the media producer for Normal, which means that I do all our online news and information and interviews, and we get the truth out about cannabis, you know. You watch TV and you see those talking head shows, they get three heads in a box, two of them that are anti-marijuana, one who's pro, and they give them like 45 seconds to talk. Well, no more. We're starting Normal Show Live this Labor Day weekend. It's going to be a two-hour talk radio show all about marijuana with the experts, the people that can really help you win these arguments when you're talking to people. But since this is the... Oh, and by the way, I'm sponsored by Starfish Designs, which is why I have to bring this up on stage and say, Starfish Designs, the finest in Gandalf products. Starfish Designs, Bend, Oregon. Order now. That's the radio voice. I love the radio voice. But in my job, this is really kind of cool because I do the podcast for Normal. I do the national outreach for Normal. I do blogging for Normal. I appear on television shows. I write articles for magazines like West Coast Leaf and so on. So so much for that amotivational syndrome, huh? I get doing a lot of work. I'm working harder now than I do marijuana activism than I ever worked in corporate life. It's kind of funny because when I was in high school, I remember asking my guidance counselor, excuse me, do you have a job where I can work at home, sit in my basement, talk about marijuana all day, write about marijuana all day, and smoke marijuana all day? Do you have a job like that? And they said, well, air traffic controller's out. Let's see. Maybe not teacher. But no, they did not have a job description for professional pothead, but I managed to find one. And one of the things I like to do on my show, on the Daily Audio Stash, which is available at stash.normal.org. That's right, stash.normal.org, is I have a segment that I call Stupid Stoner Stories. Because, you know, I'm a stoner, I'll admit it. You know, I'm wearing a hemp leaf cap that's made of hemp, 100%. So, obviously, a pothead. But, you know, I do this show, and, you know, I love our culture, I love our people, but, you know, we've got to represent better sometimes. we've got to get away from, you know, behaving in a stereotypical way that gives our opponents this cudgel to beat us over the head with. You know, we can have all these studies come out that talk about how great medical marijuana is and how wonderful we can tax and regulate and make all this money for the country, and then one bonehead that gets on the evening news that does something stupid, and then there's marijuana involved, and flush, all that good news goes through the toilet. So I kind of highlight these stories to help people learn a lesson about being a stoner in this society. And there's one that was just kind of this guy just the other day was pulled over by the cops, and then as he's going forward in front of the police camera, takes his bag of weed and throws it under the car. It's like, you know, they have cameras now. They have this technology called cameras, and they catch this kind of stuff. The best stupid stoner story of 2008 was one in California, in Fresno, California. They caught this guy in a casino. Okay, first clue right there, casino, right? Cameras, lots and lots of cameras, lots and lots of security. So he's at the blackjack table, and they got the overhead camera, blackjack table, and the dealer, you know, he's getting every dealer in, pick chip, put the chip, you know, dealer chip. And this guy, flips out a bag of weed and throws it on the table. Like, that's his bet. Like, and he sits there like, he's like, okay, where's my chips? Give me the chips. And the dealer's kind of looking at the guy like, what in the hell? And so finally the guy goes, okay, takes it back. And he opens it up, and he takes out just a bud, and then sits back down on the table. Like the dealer was going to go, well, thank you for, you know, obviously I can't take it out of the bag for you, but here you go, here's your chips. So of course they bring the security and they take the guy away. Well, this, you know, was on video, of course, in a casino. That gets released to YouTube. It gets on the Fox News channel. It gets on all the, you know, people spreading it out virally. And once again, it's, you know, stupid stoners. But I also keep track of stupid cops. This is a fun part of my job as well. I was pleased to print this story. This one came out of Ohio, and it was the story of undercover narcs. Arrest undercover narc. What had happened is that the city cops in this particular county went on a drug sting. You know, we're going to set up a buy. We're going to catch the bad guy. Bad, evil, dope smell, soap smokers. And we're going to catch him. They set up the buy. They set up with this guy who's, you know, and of course, the city cops are thinking, you know, this guy, some of the city cops, some of the guys on the beat were like, well, you know, this guy kind of seems a little like he might be a cop. And they're thinking, I think this guy might be an undercover. So they call the county. They call the county. Hey, county, this is the city police department. We're going to be doing this sting on this guy named Jeffrey Johnson, whatever his name was. Do you have any undercovers in the area? County sheriffs are like, no, we don't have any undercovers in that area. Great. So the city guys, they set up the bust. They get the bust all run. They got the guy in the handcuffs. Finally, the sheriff gets the note and says, hey, they've got this guy. Yes, he was an undercover cop. So even the county sheriffs didn't know who was running what organization, what deal. The city doesn't know what the county's doing. County doesn't know what the city's doing. Meanwhile, they're wasting all this time and all this taxpayer money to put together this bust to bust each other, for the cops busting the cops. And that kind of makes me mad, because I'm a numbers guy. I'm a recovering nerd. Dungeons and Dragons, anyone? Dungeon Master, anyone? All right. Not only nerd, I'm an old nerd. I'm dating myself. Great. But this numbers thing, when I look at the statistics of crime in America, this is some amazing stuff. 872,721 Americans were arrested for marijuana last year in 2008. Meanwhile, 574,302 people were arrested for all violent crime combined. Murder, rape, arson, you know, assault, that kind of stuff. So, seems like a waste of time here, but then some people will say, well, you know, Russ, there's just not as much violent crime. There's a lot of potheads out there. We don't catch all of them, but there's not that much violent crime. Oh! Well then, how come when I look at this other statistic on the FBI page, it's called the clearance rate of crimes in America, you find that only 46% of all violent crimes lead to an arrest and prosecution. Okay, now that wasting of the time on the 872,721 looks a little more important, and you're thinking, hey, every time a cop busts a kid for a baggie of weed, that's 9 hours of police, court, and prosecutorial time that's taken up in this country. When we've got only 54% of the violent crimes can't be solved. There's something wrong there when you think about that. And, yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. I'll be here all day. No. Some other things to think about number-wise is that in America, 95.9 million people who have smoked marijuana above the age of 18 that will admit to it when a stranger calls them on the telephone. Okay, so let's say it might be a little more than that. But when you start narrowing down the age demographics, from the ages of 18 to 34, it's like 53%. When you go to the ages of like 40 to 50, it's like 51%. Only in that like mom and pop age in the middle is it below 50%. Even then, it's like 49.8. So when you look at the overall age group, 18 to 50, it's more than half of the people have at least smoked marijuana once in their lifetime. Like I say, flip a coin, heads, someone smoked pot, tails, they know someone who has. And so that's why these lies that they keep pouring forward. I mean, you've seen the commercials, right? The alien comes down, takes the girlfriend, and the guy is smoking weed, and his puppy comes up to him. And man, I've smoked a lot of weed. I ain't never seen anything as whack as what you see in the Drug Czar commercials, right? That's some tripping stuff, man. I can't handle that. But these lies are starting to fade away. You know, the one where you pull up in the ONDCP or the drive-thru, and a little girl comes by the bike, and all the kids are smoking weed, and they run over the girl in the bike. Now, that never happens, because you're always stuck there, opening the bag, making sure they got all the tacos and all the tater tots and everything you ordered. And these stoners, we order a lot. But these lies are starting to fade away, because we start to have some majorities here. In the last few polls that they've done nationwide, we found that about 42 to 46% nationwide support legalization. Not decrim, not medical, but just legalization. About 42, 44%. But when you look out here in the great Pacific Northwest and the west coast of California, the last California field poll was 56% supporting legalization.
Woo!
So it's here for the west coast. So it's starting to change, and it's changing because so many people have used and have not had anything bad happen to them. Between the ages of 18 and 25, one out of four people will smoke marijuana. When you go to the next age group, 25 to 34, it's one out of eight. So a lot of people have smoked marijuana, and they know that what they're hearing these days are lies. But you know, I mentioned 95.9% have smoked pot, but you know, that counts the ones who just smoked once, and
I smoked it once when I was a kid, and I didn't like it, and I never smoked it again.
You know those types, right? It's the once in a while guys. So how about how many people smoke pot, you know, once a year? Like, how many once-a-year pot smokers are there? Well, according to the government stats, there's 25 million people in America that will smoke pot at least once this year. Now, for comparison's sake, that's as many tokers as Texans. There's as many people who will smoke pot this year as there are people in the state of Texas. And last I checked, Texas had some political power. They tend to get, you know, a little attention in Washington. That's more tokers than there are adult African Americans in the United States. Well, last I checked, there's some political power there, right? That's more tokers than there are diabetics, diagnosed and undiagnosed. And I see ads for diabetic medicine all the time on TV, so how come we don't get the respect? We don't get the, well, once a year. That's still not, maybe, you know, stoner, right? Once a year, that's, well, I come to Hemp Fest once a year, get my smoke on, and then I never do it again. I've got a job, I've got to pass a pee test. So how many monthly smokers are there? Well, 8 million.
I do every day.
Well, that counts. So you're one of those. 8 million a year that will smoke marijuana at least once a month. Now, for comparison's sake, that's more than the membership of the ACLU, the NRA, the National Abortion Rights Action League, the National Organization for Women, Greenpeace, PETA, and the John Birch Society combined. More people will smoke pot this month than all of those political organizations, and yet, last time I checked, they tried to do anything about gun control. NRA gets that stuff stuffed, man. Why? Because they write letters, they call their congressmen, they make a lot of noise. Last time they tried to do something about Social Security, AARP stuffs it. Why? They write letters, they call their congressmen, they make a lot of noise, right? You know, abortion rights, that always gets stuffed. Why? Because those people, they stand up for their rights and they put forth, you know, letters and calls to their congressmen. But yeah, maybe once a month, maybe that's not enough. Maybe that's not smoking pot enough for you. Well, there are 3.6 million people in America who will smoke pot every day. There they are, right there. 3.6 million people that will smoke pot. That is more than Red Sox fans in this country. There are more people who smoke pot every day than there are Red Sox fans. And that's based on the attendance at the Red Sox games, both home and away. Okay, well, it costs money to go to a Red Sox game. That is more tokers than United States Mormons.
Wow.
There are more daily tokers than there are Mormons. And I, you know, I'm not telling you to go to school. I was baptized Mormon as a kid, but I was from Idaho. It's kind of required. So think about that when you think about political power and that, you know, we've got some. We just haven't quite learned how to marshal it yet. My friend Madeline Martinez has been saying, step away from the joint, step away from the bomb, make a phone call, right? So here's a number I want to give you. Sherry, you got a cell phone? Your president. I'm going to give you Barack Obama's phone number. I have Barack Obama's phone number in my box. This is the all-time BlackBerry. Seriously, this is the president's phone number. It's 202. All right, you ready? Here, get this. This is the president's phone number. This is the White House comment line. Wait. I'm going to go. 202. 456. 1111. That number, once again, is 202-456-1111. Call now. You get to get it 2 nights. And if you order today, we'll double it. That's right. Double your order. Sorry, radio voice can't help it. That's Barack Obama's number. I got another number for you. Oh, my God, another number. Oh, shit. All right, ready? This is the number for Congress. Now, everybody's like, oh, God, Congress. I don't know my congressman. I don't know. I don't want to do this. Okay, it's really easy, right? You call them up. They say, what's your zip code? You say, 97214. They put you through your congressman, whoever it is, right? You don't even have to say their name. You say, I'd like to speak to my congressman. And they'll usually get you to a staffer or whatever that'll take a note. But that's still cool. They're still getting a phone call. The number for Congress is 202. These are Washington, D.C. numbers. 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. And you just call them up and you say, hey, I'd like to speak to my congressman. And they'll say, oh, I didn't get your aid or whatever. Okay, I'd like to let my congressman know to support Barney Frank's decrim bill. Let me be real quick about that. Barney Frank's congressman from Massachusetts. He's got this bill out. He's a great man. Got this bill out. What it would do is it would end federal penalties for all personal possession of marijuana for up to 3.5 ounces, 100 grams. Federal penalties. No federal. Right now, if you're caught with one joint in America, the federal cops can lock you up for a year and fine you $10,000. One joint, one plant. That's federal law. Now, mostly the feds don't mess with you, because for the feds, they want to catch the big boys. They want to catch Tony Montana, right? So feds usually worry about 100 plants or more. So, no, it's not likely. But, you know, if an FBI agent came up to you and you smoked a joint in his face, yeah, that could be, you know, a year and 10,000. So this Barney Frank bill, this one would make it so that they would end all federal penalties. That doesn't fix the states, right? If you live in a bad state, they could still, you know, I'm from Idaho originally, they'll lock you up. I think a year and six months and $500 in Idaho, I think. By the way, in my home state of Idaho, it's a crime to just be in an area where there are drugs being used. So like if you had a roommate who was a stoner and you didn't know anything about it, right, and they busted him, you could be prosecuted in Idaho for living with that person. Yeah, that's kind of the stuff that's going on here. Some other amazing stuff. I know this is supposed to be last comedy stage. This isn't funny, but New York City. Here's an interesting thing about New York City is New York State is decriminalized. So in the state of New York, personal possession of 7/8 of an ounce or less is like a ticket. There's no record. We just give you a ticket, right? And yet, New York City is the arrest capital of the world. Highest arrest rate of marijuana smokers of any city. Like 40,000 people arrested in New York last year for marijuana, for personal possession, right? A joint, a little dime bag, whatever. So how can that be? How can a state be decrim, but the city, you know, puts you in jail? Well, the cops have this trick. I don't know if you guys knew this. Let me clue you into something here. Police can lie to you.
They do!
They do, and they will, and they can. Police can lie to you. They can tell you outright fibs in the purpose of going through their investigations. Yes, the police can lie to you, absolutely. 100% can tell you lies. And here's how it works in New York. The cops find a kid on the street, usually black or Latino kid on the street. The stats don't lie. It's obviously a racist thing they're doing. And they'll go to these neighborhoods that it's, you know, oddly it's never the Upper East Side. You know, it's never the West Side. It's never where the rich white folks are, right? But I won't go there yet. But they'll get these kids and they'll pat them down. And they can do a pat down on you. Make sure you don't have a weapon or anything. What they can't do, this is an interesting quirk piece. They can pat you down. But if they squeeze to feel it's like a joint, that's an unreasonable search. Little thing, nice thing to know. But they pat you down, right? And they'll say, I think you might have a bag of weed on you. If you'll just take it out of your pocket, if you'll just show us what you've got, and it's not that much, well, we'll go easy on you. We'll take it easy on you. It'll go a lot easier if you just take it out. So the kid goes, well, yeah, okay, it takes it out. Public display of marijuana is a misdemeanor, punishable by jail time and fines and getting your fingerprints and getting, you know, all that bad stuff. So personal possession, not a crime. So the cops lie to you and say, hey, we'll go easy on you. You take it out of your pocket, bam, that's a misdemeanor. That's how they're arresting 40,000 kids a year in New York City. So things to learn. Never consent to a search. Just saying no to searches. And saying no to searches is tough because cops have these tricks they use on you. Like they'll say, hey, take all the stuff out of your pockets. No, I do not consent to a search. If you take your stuff out of your pockets, they don't even have to search you. You're showing them. They don't have to ask, right? You're giving into it. You're giving away your Fifth Amendment rights, right? So don't give it to them. Don't help a cop arrest you. I do so many of these podcasts. And by the way, anybody that wants these flyers, you can have them. I'll pass them around. They do the podcast, the Daily Audio Stash. 5 days a week, I talk about this stuff. I interview the doctors, the lawyers, the ex-cops who are against drug prohibition. I interview all these people so you get the real truth on this stuff. But the biggest category of the stupid stoner stories I do are the people that give in to searches. I get emails all the time from people that say, I'm riding normal. I hope you can help me. I got pulled over by a police officer, and he had said my tail light was out. And then he asked if I had weed, and I said, yes, I did. So I took out my bag, and I gave it to him.
I was like, you might as well stop riding there. I can't help you. You just said,
excuse me, Mr. Officer, I'm committing a crime. Would you please arrest me?
Why would you do that? Don't do that.
So, say no to a search. The other thing you can say is, I do not wish to speak to you or answer any questions until my attorney's present.
Dude, I did that. I got out.
Yeah.
I did that.
Do it. And you got got out?
They cannot pack search females. Male officers cannot search.
That's right.
You have a right to say, take me to the police station. And if they resist, you keep saying, I do not submit to a pack search.
And I would like you to note that in your report. I would like you to note that in your report. Can I get your badge number? Can I get your badge number? That's exactly right. And the thing is, people go, if I cooperate, maybe I can get away with it. If you think someone's a good guy, maybe I can get away with it. No, their job is to arrest you. If they have a reason to arrest you, they shall. Yeah.
Wait, I have a question. So, say you keep on, denying it. Wouldn't they, get more concerned and send, more cops and, try to psych you out?
In most states, when they pull you over, they've got 30 minutes to do something about it before it's unreasonable detention. And another thing that you can often say is, officer, am I being detained or am I free to go now? And they'll say, well, we're detaining you. Could you tell me why you're detaining me, please? Well, we've got to get the drug dogs. I do not consent to any searches, officer. I'd like to speak with my attorney, and if I'm not being detained, I'd like to go now. And you just keep repeating that same thing over and over again. And the thing is this doesn't stop cops from being bad cops. They can still arrest you, break your constitutional rights, search you without a warrant, whatever. But boy, your lawyer will be so happy to hear what you said while you were in that stop, because that's like, oh, get out of jail free card. Thank you very much. So think about that. Where can I go? I can keep going. I'll keep talking tonight, I'm afraid. Does anybody have any questions about marijuana law reform or anything like that? I talk to a lot of people. All right, you think about it. I got something for you here. Reefer Madness is another thing that I do on my show. And what I like to do is I like to take the scare stories that you hear in the media and just make fun of them. I like the Stephen Colbert thing. Yeah, exactly. You have a question?
Yeah, do you like playing piano madly?
You play piano madly, you'll jump out a window and you'll kill someone with axe. No, this Reefer Madness stuff, the term Reefer Madness, for those of you younger, you might not know, Reefer Madness comes from a movie from 1936 that was part of the yellow journalism, the propaganda that helped to make marijuana illegal. Now, what made marijuana illegal in the first place was racism, pure and simple. No doubt about it, it was racism. And we see this in the drug war all around, not just marijuana. Opium was smoked in this country in the turn of the 20th century all the time, until the Chinese came in and started opening opium dens, and the white crews are going to the Chinese opium dens. And the marijuana was brought up. Marijuana wasn't even marijuana. Everybody knew what cannabis was in America. They knew what hemp was in America. They didn't know what marijuana, what's that? That was the Mexican slang word for hemp that they used to try to scare folks. It's the Mexicans in their marijuana. Marijuana. It even sounds, it's got a J, but you say it like a what? It's foreign. It's scary. So marijuana is a racist term right off the bat. Although, I always think about that sometimes. I work for NORML, right? National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. It's like, well, I mean, marijuana, I don't know about that word. You can't change it to cannabis, though, because NORCL doesn't sound cool. NORCL won't work. And then I think about, the NAACP. But we're not changing their name. The UNCF, they're not changing their name. So we'll stick with NORML for a while. But anyway, marijuana was made illegal back in the 1930s, but even before that, 1910, 1920, it was all had to do with the Southwest and us taking over a lot of the land down there and Mexican migrants coming in and having to demonize them. And they couldn't lock them up for being brown, so they locked them up for what they smoked. That's what they did. And that's a pattern in American history they don't teach you in school. That's why I do my podcast. But anyway, to talk about these kind of things, you know, it's interesting when you look at the statistics of the drug war, because they like to paint it as being some sort of problem racially. They like to paint it as a problem of certain neighborhoods and certain people. Now, when you look at the statistics and you break it down by race, 45% of pale-skinned people like me have smoked marijuana. When you look at African-Americans, it's 1 in 3. When you look at Latinos, it's 1 in 4. When you look at Asians, it's 1 in 6. So it's not that. You know, this is a white person problem, except we're not the ones that gets arrested, you see. It's what Paul Mooney calls it, the complexion of protection. Woo! Yeah, and no, it's not cool. It's not cool. I don't dig it at all, but that's why I wear this hat, you know. So, anyway, yeah.
So are you saying just by race, like, cops are, like, looking out for, like, one, like, particular people to be, like, marijuana smokers?
Yes. Yes, easily. And in fact, I spoke to Dr. Harry Levine from Queens College. He was in one of my interviews recently. He's written this whole paper on this New York City explosion of marijuana arrests. And he's analyzed this and done it on the racial breakdown. And yeah, and the cops he interviews talks about how they use the marijuana laws, first of all, because cops have to get a certain amount of arrests, and the number of arrests they get are part of their statistics, and that helps them get promotions and so on. So you have that, you know, incentive to have more and more arrests. Number two, cops talk about how when they arrest someone, it's like being married to them for 4 hours. Whoever you arrest is going to be in your squad car, you're going to be sitting at your desk while you do your paperwork with them. Now, do you want to arrest the guy using heroin who's puking and might have, you know, you don't know if he's got a disease or whatever, or do you arrest the nice, peaceful pothead who will tell you cool stories or whatever? So they do that a lot. They like to arrest the marijuana smoker for that. But number three, and this is where the racial angle comes in on this, is that they use the marijuana arrest to get people into the system. That's the goal, because they just can't go to the neighborhood, the hood, whatever it might be, and just start knocking on doors and saying, excuse me, Mr. Washington, can we have your fingerprints and DNA? Excuse me, Mr. Jefferson, can we have your fingerprints and DNA? They can't do that. Obviously, it's unconstitutional. But we arrest a bunch of people in these neighborhoods for little amounts of pot by lying to them and making them show the weed. Now we can get their fingerprints, now they're in the system, and we can better keep track of people. So, marijuana prohibition isn't about marijuana per se. It's about control of people. Simple. It's about control of people. It's about economic reasons. We can get into all the industrial hemp reasons. Boy, that would be another talk, let me tell you. But again, I do want to just plug this one more time. Normal Show Live. This will be starting on the Labor Day weekend. Live talk radio, 2 hours, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Look it up on normal.org. You'll find it. They got the Google here, right? The Google. That's what Jerry Bush used to call it. The Google. I love that. So I want to tell you about that. The Daily Audio Stash at stash.normal.org. 6 days a week, you can get the truth, me interviewing scientists, doctors, lawyers. These people at HempFest that are speaking, all of them, they're on the stash. We get celebrities, musicians, people, all sorts of stuff that you can learn from the show. I want to thank you for coming out to HempFest. Don't forget to pick up a piece of garbage. That's the admittance. When you leave HempFest, you got to pick up a piece of garbage. Thanks for having me out at the Comedy Stage. I appreciate it, and thanks so much.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org, and you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent.
leave you today with a reminder to tell your friends about the upcoming Normal Show Live. We're going on the air September 5th, that's Saturday of Labor Day weekend, 6 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and you'll be able to find it right here at stash.normal.org or the new live address at live.normal.org. 2 hours of talk radio that you can call into and offer your opinions, and we're going to have the best guests from the Stash as well as extra special celebrity, musician, actor, and comedian guests that we don't normally get here on the Stash. It's up to you, though, to help us make it a success, and the more successful it gets, the more likely we can get it on the mainstream radio stations. So tune in to Normal Show Live. And now, as a special treat to those of you who listen to the podcast all the way through to the end, until Normal Show Live debuts, I'm going to be playing for you a special voiceover from our Normal Show Live as kind of a preview of the show. So here you go, a little taste of Normal Show Live, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Maschinen auer im Wasser. Another one bites the dust. Der Alloy Schlummer und in the Artillery. Another one bites the dust. Let's not the hell no one. Let's not the hell no one. Let's not the hell no one. You're listening to Normal Show Live. Let's not the hell no one. The voice of the marijuana nation.